You want to go with plate, this plate.
Also,
take the plate and
so today is the glorious appearance day, Srimad Radharani.
Okay.
Thank you for giving me this the honor and the privilege of speaking something about her. I do so with great trepidation because the pastimes of Radha and Krishna are very intimate and very confidential, extremely confidential topics that should not be engaged in by neophyte devotees. Lord Chaitanya, who is an incarnation of both Radha and Krishna combined, he never spoke about the pastimes of Radha and Krishna except to two or three people, Ramananda Rai, Sri Damodar, maybe a couple of others, but Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who is the greatest philosopher of his time, Lord Chaitanya did not speak about this. He didn't speak anything about this to him. But to speak of us. So we should tread very carefully with fear. So trepidation means with fear that we don't make any offenses. Srila Prabhupada warns continuously in the Krishna book, specifically in those five chapters of the Rasa dance, he bravely warns the reader ahead of time never to think of these dealings of Krishna and the gopis, of Krishna with Radha, as to be the ordinary dealings of boys and girls, of men and women. Like one, Srila Prabhupada said how the conditioned soul, when he hears, you know, he's speaking about in India, so when the conditioned soul, they hear the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, when he hears the name of Radha, he thinks about the barber's wife who he's having an affair with. That kind of mentality will destroy our spiritual life. Jiva Goswami explains that unless our understanding is based upon Vedanta, then it's not bhakti. Bhakti means understanding based upon Vedanta. Otherwise, it's just sentiments. And while it's good to have a positive sentiment, sentimentality can be very destructive. People don't. They just do their own thing. And then this creates an obstacle in their devotional service, and it disrupts society. Utpatyaiva kalpite. Shrutish miti puranadi. Pancharatra dinindina. Akaintaki hare pate. Utpatyaiva kalpite. That devotional service is not based upon the Shruti, the Smriti, Puranas, Mahabharata, Itihasas, Pancharatra. It's not based upon that. It's just based upon what we think it should be. It's based upon our sentiment. It creates a disturbance in society and a disturbance in the person's own spiritual life. It can be very destructive. We see that even a short period of time after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who revealed these, the whole Sankirtan movement and Radha Krishna Lila. Can everybody please move up here to the front? We'd like some Sadhu Sangha.
Many people waiting outside.
Sadhu Sangha. Sadhu Sangha. Sarva Shastra Hai. Sadhu Sangha, Lava Mantra, Sarada Siddhi Hari. So get closer so I can have your association. So, even shortly after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya, Sahajism swept through the Utkal, Bengal and Orisha, that people took things very cheaply, and this was very destructive to spiritual life in general. Until the point when Bhaktivinoda Thakur came along, he couldn't even find Chaitanya Charitamrita. It becomes so covered over. So we have to be very careful in these topics. When we are mature, when we naturally mature, then we'll be able to enter into these topics deeply. We'll understand. Bhaktisiddhanta said, explained that when one has complete, when one has finished anartha nivritti, which is, let's see this,
Shraddha,
Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, then comes anartha nivritti, the fourth stage, the hardest stage. All the other stages are pretty easy compared to number four is the tough one. It could take a long time. Pabu Janmanam Ante. Take a long time before you get to anartha nivritti. But once you have finished with anartha nivritti and get to the next stage, which is so, you know, for me, I'm still stuck in anartha nivritti. I don't even know what the next stage is. But but Bhaktisiddhanta said that once you achieve, you've cut through anartha nivritti, then you understand your own swarup. You know who you are. You know your siddha swarup, your spiritual identity. And then these topics become normal discussions for you. Like, you see, if you just, to give a mundane analogy, you know, five-year-old children, you know, imagine five-year-old children talking about the sex lives of their parents or the sex life of adults. They will have absolutely no idea what it means because they're children. They have no experience. They cannot possibly experience. But if they simply, and if you try to explain it to them, they will, you know, their eyes will roll over, they just won't get it. Because they're children. And oftentimes, I know parents would come to me and they'd say, oh, my little child, he's just such a nice devotee, such a pure devotee, you know, just look at him, you know. And how old is he? Oh, 8. Okay, wait till he's 13. Then tell me what you think. Because then, when puberty comes in, then all these understandings naturally occur. When the body matures, then these, you don't have to explain to the children, but they know by themselves. So, in a transcendental way, when we become spiritually mature, then all these topics will make sense to us. Just like topics of biological reactions will make sense to post-pubescent children. But before that, they don't understand. It's all theoretical. And they're completely confused. So we have to become mature. You know, by following, just by dealing, just by proceeding in our sadhana. Sadhana bhakti. One time, Bhaktisiddhanta, he became disturbed after giving some of his disciples second initiation, and he heard some of them discussing about the meaning of the Kama Bija mantra, about how, what does it mean, shooting flower arrows at Krishna? How will I shoot flower arrows? Now they were like discussing about they're going to shoot flower arrows at Krishna, you know? That's the rough. So then Bhaktisiddhanta became distraught, thinking, I've never thrown flower arrows. He was saying, I'm aspiring for that, and they're debating how will it be done, like that. You know, he was very disturbed to hear such discussion. On another occasion, several of his disciples, well, three or four of them, they wanted to see Bhaktisiddhanta. And discussed, they were very serious devotees, and they came to him, and they were saying, you know, Guru Maharaj, we've been strictly following your instructions. we've been, you know, getting up every morning, doing all of sadhana, chanting around, reading everything, but still, we don't feel we made any advancement. Bhakti Sam said, oh, thank God. He said, thank God. Thank God. I thought you were going to talk about, you know, that you did all these things, but now you're getting some big realizations. You know, no, you're humble. That's very good. You're making real advancement because you have humility. He was concerned. He was so relieved when they said that they hadn't made any advancement. You know, you must have made a lot of advancements if you think you haven't made any. So he was so relieved to hear his disciples speak that way. They after they heard that, they became very enthused. Because they weren't shallow devotees. When Bhakti Siddhanta went to Radhakunda for the Ranjamandal Parikram, and he was giving class in Radhakunda. So what did he give? What was he giving discussion? Was he talking about 10th canto? Was he talking about, you know, the Gita Govinda or the songs of Chandidas? No. He was discussing the Upanishads. The Upanishads. And the Babaji's of Vrindavan were accusing, they were disparaging, said he's not a Rasika devotee. Because he's not discussing the rasa. And he was discussing Upanishads. Just get to the basics. But at the same time, in one sense, it's fitting to discuss the Upanishads in Radhakunda because there was a whole group of gopis who were the personifications of the Upanishads and became gopis. So it also fit at the same time. But he was basically showing that these topics are very elevated and not to be discussed in a very, you know, in a public area. In fact, there were no deities in Vrindavan, no deities of Radharani in Vrindavan until the 16th century. When Lord Chaitanya came to Vrindavan and when the six Goswamis came to Vrindavan, there were no deities of Radha then. They had to be imported. From which place? Does anybody know? Where the murti of Radharani had to come from? From Orisha. Had to come from Orisha. Because they had no deities of Radha in Vrindavan, of all places. Not in Varshana. There were no deities of Radha. They had to come. That's how confidential this is. And it was also in Orisha that Bhaktivinoda Thakur found the Chaitanya Upanishad. Because there's only two places in the world where Atharva Veda is followed. One is in a very remote part of Maharashtra and in Orisha, Pipalayana Shaka. So it's under this Pipalayana Shaka that the worship of Radha taking place. And that's how the deities were moved. Like some deities were originally sent, and then eventually it became the style, you know, to have to install Ramakrishna deities. So that gives you an idea of how confidential it is. Now, only a few hundred years ago, that there were no deities of Radharani then. So then we have to ask the question, who is Radha? Who is Radha? Sometimes, who is that girlfriend standing behind that boy? Who is she? Who is Radha? It's a very good question. Yeah. Of course, we're doing it very basic, so we don't want to get into it. Yeah. But who is Radha is explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It gives the essential meaning, gives an essential understanding of who Radharani is. And Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, chapter 4, verses 55 and 56, it gives in a nutshell who Radha and also Krishna, who Radha is. The loving affairs, this is a
Radha Krishna Pranaya Vikriti Vladini Shaktir Asmad Ekatmana Vapi Bhuvi Pura Deha Bhedam Gatau Tau Chitanyakam Prakatam Adhuna Padvayam Chaikyam Aptam Radha Baba Duty Suvalitam Naomi Krishna Swarupam. The loving affairs of Radha and Krishna are transcendental manifestations of the Lord's internal pleasure-giving potency. Although Radha and Krishna are one in their identity, they separated themselves eternally. Now these two transcendental identities have again united in the form of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. I bow down to Him who has manifested Himself with the sentiment and complexion of Srimati Radharani, although He is Krishna Himself. In the next verse, Radha Krishna Eka Atma Dui Deha Bhari Anyonye Vilasa Rasa Asvadhana Kari. So, Radha and Krishna are one and the same, but they have assumed two bodies. Thus they enjoy each other, tasting the mellows of love. And Srila Prabhupada, in purport, the two transcendentalists, Radha and Krishna, are a puzzle to the materialists. The above description of Radha and Krishna from the diary of Srila Swarup Damodar Goswami is a condensed explanation, but one needs great spiritual insight to understand the mystery of these two personalities. One is enjoying in two. Sri Krishna is the potent factor, and Srimati Radharani is the internal potency. According to Vedanta philosophy, there is no difference between the potent and the potency. They are identical. We cannot differentiate between one and the other any more than we can separate fire from heat. Everything in the Absolute is inconceivable in relative existence. That's important. Everything in the Absolute is inconceivable in relative existence. It's like children. They can't understand that which is beyond them. So we live in this material where we can't understand what is above. It's like a glass ceiling which separates us. Therefore, in relative cognizance, it is very difficult to assimilate this truth of the oneness between the potent and the potency. The philosophy of inconceivable oneness and difference propounded by Lord Chaitanya is the only source of understanding of such intricacies of transcendence, achintya bheda abheda tattva. In fact, Radharani is the internal potency of Sri Krishna, and she eternally intensifies the pleasure of Sri Krishna. Impersonalists cannot understand this without the help of a Mahabhagavat devotee. The very name Radha suggests that Srimati Radharani is eternally the topmost mistress of the comforts of Lord Krishna. As such, she is the medium transmitting the living entity's service to Sri Krishna. Devotees in Vrindavan therefore seek the mercy of Srimati Radharani in order to be recognized as loving servitors of Sri Krishna. So this last paragraph brings us to the point that Bhaktisiddhanta explains that in Guru Tattva, the Guru Tattva is not different than Krishna. But the spiritual master is the direct manifestation of Srimati Radharani, because she is the personification of service to Krishna. What does the Guru do? He teaches you how to serve Krishna. That's Srimati Radharani, acting through the Guru. So the Guru in Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya is the direct manifestation of Srimati Radharani. And she, through the Guru, helps us teaches us how to serve the Lord. And if someone wants to comes forward to serve Krishna, this makes Srimati Radharani immensely, infinitely happy. Because that's what she does.
She always wants to serve Krishna. She wants to reunite with Krishna. She's ek atma. They are one soul which has been divided into two bodies. So she is always trying to unite herself with Krishna. That's why if you look at it from an astrological perspective, Krishna, he has moon in Rohini, nakshatra, in Vrishabha Rashi. Whereas Radha, she is born with moon in Vrishchik Rashi and it's in Anuradha nakshatra. So, the essence of Vrishchik is two things. They want security, complete security, and they want to unify. They want to become united with God. They want to become the unification of the soul with God. That is the essence of Vrishchika Rasi. Now, from a mundane perspective, everybody wants that, but they attempt it through biological processes of unification of the body. That is as close as most people will get to union of soul. But as Srila Prabhupada said, it's very frustrating because the bodies get in the way. The body gets in the way. It frustrates the soul. They're trying to unite. It's the natural urge of the soul to unite. So they, in a perverse way, they are physically uniting, but it is extremely frustrating because the body gets in the way. But that is the urge of the soul, is to do this. So that is the... So in astrology, when the moon or the alignments are in opposition, that is a good match. You look for those kind of things astrologically. So since we're speaking about astrology, would you like to hear a story about Radha Krishna and the astrologer? Okay. That's awesome. So, nothing could be worse for a married woman in Krishna's Vedic culture to have her pativrata, question. That is her most important thing, is her pativrata. So, Radha's mother-in-law, Jatila, and her sister-in-law, Jatila, they knew that something was up between her and Krishna. So they were always making aspersions as to the chastity of Radha, that she's not faithful to Abhimanyu, that she's always making plans to be with Krishna, this and the other, and they're always trying to find evidence of her misdeeds. So this was making Radharani extremely upset that her character was being questioned. And of course for women, women commit violence on other women, or the way women commit violence is by spreading rumors. That's how women commit violence, because women feel pleasure by having relationships, by being in society. They like that, the relationships with it. So if you can break up somebody's relationship, then you inflict injury on them. So they do that by spreading rumors about other women. Men, they have other ways of dealing with. They just go out in the back street and they punch each other. But women, they gossip about each other and they try to isolate one woman from all the rest of society. That's how they do violence. I think women will agree that that's what the story is, isn't it? That's the story. They just like to get each other out, because women value relationships. So this way, Katila and Jatila were doing great violence to Radharani by insulting her in front of all the other ladies, that they won't want to hang out with her. The husbands of the other gopis certainly are not going to allow their wives to hang out with a known, whatever that is, with a known unfaithful wife. Would any woman want her husband to hang out with womanizing drunkards? No. So similarly, men don't want their wives to hang out with
shady, women of loose morals. So this way they were isolating Radharani and hurting her. So she was feeling very badly about this. But because Krishna loves Radharani more than anything, she is, otherwise she's, they're one soul, like Atma, appearing in two bodies. So he was feeling great pain because she's being insulted this way, that her chastity is being questioned. So then, an astrologer came to Vrindavan, came to Gokul, to the Brajamandala. Krishna came in the form of an astrologer, and he said to the people, according to my calculations, I have come to this place because I found that the most chaste woman in the universe resides in this area. And all the women were like, they were thinking, that must be me. I am the one, you know. But the astrologer says, well, you know, but there's a test. The most chaste woman in the world, she has to take this bucket with 1,000 holes, go to the Yamuna, and bring it to me, and not one drop will spill. That will be the sign of her chastity. That she can take a bucket with 1,000 holes and bring a full bucket of water to me. You know, so, and that, several women in that area tried it, and they didn't work. All the water fell out. So, ladies didn't want to, they were shy about doing it. So then, Krishna, the former astrologer, he was progressively getting closer to Radharani, where Radharani was residing. He said, I'm finding by my calculations that I'm getting closer to where the most chaste woman in the universe is living. Right? So, and he tried, you know, different villages along the way, and all the ladies, you know, they thought they were the ones, but then they couldn't succeed. You know, all the water fell out immediately. They didn't even take one step, because before they took a step, the water was out. So finally he came to the village, the area where Radha was living, where Nabi Mandu and her mother-in-law and sister-in-law. The greatest tormentors of women are their mother-in-laws and sister-in-laws, even to this day. I have many clients who testify to this fact. So Krishna, the former astrologer, was saying, I further refine my calculations that the most chaste one in the universe is living in this house here. So immediately, Jatila and Katila knew it could be Radha, it must be us. By deduction, you know, they eliminated the obvious one, Radha. She's not in the running. It must be one of us too. So they were very happy that they were, one of them was the most chaste woman in the universe. So, by way of seniority, Jatila went first. She's the mother, after all. So she took the bucket, 1,000 holes in it, went and put water in it, and didn't work. All the water fell right out. So then Jatila thought, well, it must be me. Katila thought, well, it must be me then. I am the most chaste woman in the world. I'm not even married. So then she went and took the bucket, and of course all the water fell out. So now there was only Radha. And the soldier, no. They were saying, no, that can't be her. She's totally unchaste. No, then he said, no, definitely, 100%, the most chaste woman in the world must live in this house. They were saying, no, it's impossible. It can't be her. She's the most unchaste woman, not the most chaste. So I was like, no. Well, there's no point arguing about this. Just give her the bucket. So Radharani went, filled the bucket, gave it to the astrologer, well, dropping one drop. And this way, Lord Krishna preserved Radharani's reputation. Because she is the most chaste. She's completely sold out to Krishna. All the gopis, but specifically Radharani, the most chaste personality. She is totally, Krishna is everything to her. This is real Pati Vrata, as described in the Bhagavatam.
the lady who sees her husband as worshipable as God. Or what to speak? Well, what about when he is God? He actually is God. Then he is the most worshipable. And for Radharani, Krishna is the most worshipable. He is everything to her. And to please Krishna, she does so many things. You know, all these different kind of arguments that lovers have, and just to keep Krishna happy by different emotional turmoils like that. Bhakti Siddhanta once said that Vaishnavas, they are worshippers of Vishnu. Karshanas, they are worshippers of Krishna. But we are followers of Radha. We only worship Krishna because she likes him. That's why. If she didn't like him, we wouldn't worship him. But because she likes Krishna, therefore we are worshipping Krishna. So the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, that's their specialty. We worship Krishna. Bhakti Siddhanta said that in other sampradayas, there's swarupa. They only have one swarupa. But in Gaudiya Sampradaya, a person has two swarupas. In Lord Chaitanya's Leela, he has a male swarup. And in Krishna Leela, he has a female swarup. As you see in the picture of the Bhagavatam, the original cover of the first canto, you know, you see all of the universes and then the Vaikuntha planets, and then in Goloka Vrindavan, it's divided down the middle. On one side is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement, all men, and on the other side it's one man and all the rest are ladies. Radha Krishna Leela. So it's that is the specialty of the Gaudiya Sampradaya. But we have to wait a little bit. Right now we're like the raw mangoes. If you just wait, then we'll become right. I'm still waiting. So, how to decide who is the most special devotee? In Manu says, how to determine who is the most senior Brahmin? In an assembly of Brahmins, who is the most senior by knowledge? He could be a 5-year-old boy, but if he knows more, he is the most senior. Then when Vamanadeva appeared, who's coming here shortly, he will be appearing soon. He was a little boy, but everybody stood up for him. Because seniority amongst Brahmins is not by how big they are, as Alavandar proved. It's not how big you are. You know, by that category, then when the Rajguru asked Alavandar questions, he would ask questions like, you know, what is 1 + 1? Yeah, very simple, you know, because Alavandar was just a little boy. You know, Yamunacharya and his Purvashra. He's a little boy. And so the Rajguru was asking him very simple questions because he thought he's a little boy. So after a host of questions, Alavandar said, well, I can tell from the kind of questions you're asking that you must determine a pundit by his size. Well, by this definition, a water buffalo is a bigger pundit than you. Says, okay, finished with you asking me questions, I gotta ask you some questions now. That's a whole other story. So it's not the size that counts when it comes to Brahmins, but how much knowledge and realization. Now with Kshatriyas, who's the most senior? How do you tell who's the most senior? Who's the most advanced? By the one who's got the most power. Right? The most powerful, he is the biggest one. He is the most powerful one. He is the senior in the assembly of Kshatriyas. And if you don't think so, he'll beat you up. Because he's the most powerful. And amongst Vaishyas, in the assembly of Vaishyas, who is the most senior? Huh? No, the one with the biggest bank account. The one with the most money, he is the most senior. Bill Gates was just very young in his 30s, but he was the richest man in the world. So he's the senior, most senior. Others might be older, but he had the more money. So he's the most senior. With Shudras,
age. That he is the most, the oldest sutra, he is the senior one in the assembly of sutras. So, knowledge for Brahmins, power for Kshatriyas, wealth for Vaishyas, and age for Shudras. But what about Vaishnavas, devotees? Who is the most senior? Who is the most senior, the most advanced devotee? By the one who's received the most mercy from Krishna. That is the most advanced, the highest. The one who has received the most mercy of Krishna. Not age. Though, formally, as a formality, we do like that. He's a senior devotee. Why? He's been around for 35 years. But as a formality, we should do that. But Prahlad was only 5 years old. So Sanatan Goswami, he explains, actually Srila Prabhupada said that if you want to understand bhakti, what it means to be a devotee, then which book do you have to read? Anybody know? Huh? Put your hand up. He said Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Who else? Any other ideas? He said, Prabhupada, that's the science of Krishna consciousness. But to understand what it means to be a devotee, you have to read this book. Brihad Bhagavatamrita by Sanatan Goswami, Rupa's older brother. Senior. So, I'm not going to read the book because it's only volume one. There are two other volumes like that. I have read it already. It didn't give me that long. Actually, what I want is I do want to do one or two nights a week for the second initiated devotees readings from this book. That's my Prabhupada said. If you want to know what it means to be a devotee, you have to read this book. So, in the first part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's two parts, told in a different way. Sanatana Goswami explains who is the most super excellent devotee. I'll just give a synopsis, because we haven't got that much time. In the beginning of the book, of Volume 1, Narada Muni, he is traveling through the universe, and he comes across, I think it's at Banaras or Prayag, somewhere on the Ganga. He notices a very nice sattvic brahmana. He's doing very beautiful worship to some shalagam shilas, and then offering prasadam, and having nice kirtan. And Narada Muni concludes that this person, he must have achieved the greatest mercy of the Lord. And he comes and in bold and hands, he begins to offer respects to the Brahmin. The Brahmin said, no, it's not. Down in South India, there's one king, he does very elaborate puja. He really got the mercy of the Lord. Not me. And he began to explain, gave all the reasons why he didn't get any mercy. I'm not the one. I'm definitely not the one. So Narada Muni, quick on the uptake, he immediately goes to South India, goes to the king's kingdom, he sees beautiful worship is going on, elaborate puja, and he concludes, definitely, this king, he must have gotten the most mercy of the Lord. And begins to glorify the king. And the king says, no, it's not me. And he gives a whole list of reasons why it's not him. He goes on and on, defeating all of Narada Muni's statements. And the king said, the real person who got the mercy of the Lord is Indra. He's got the most mercy of the Lord. Therefore, he's the most advanced. You should go see him. And he gave all a whole list of why Indra, all the things that Indra did, why he's so lucky.
So Narada Muni immediately, he goes to Swarga, and he sees Indra, and he begins to glorify him and all the statements that the king had said. And Indra says, and stops him, stop. No, it's not me. And what are you kidding? I tried to kill all the Brajavasis. How can it be me? he goes on, says, Bali got more mercy from Upendra than I did. Upendra's Vamadev, he's my younger brother, but he stays down with Bali in Patalaloka, guarding his house. I hardly ever see him. And he goes on and on explaining how it's not me. I haven't got the mercy of the Lord. The one who really has the mercy of the Lord, Lord Brahma, he has the real mercy. And he goes explaining all the reasons why Lord Brahma has gotten the mercy of the Lord. So, Narada Muni immediately goes to see his father, Lord Brahma, and he starts glorifying his father. His father, because he is his father, starts chastising him, shouting at him, are you crazy? It's definitely not me. How can it be me? I hardly ever see the Lord. I stole his cows. I caused him trouble. He gives all the reasons why it could not possibly be him. This way, the real person who got the mercy of the Lord is Lord Shiva. He got the real mercy of the Lord. And he begins to explain all the reasons why Lord Shiva is the most advanced devotee. So then Narada Muni, he goes to Kailash, and he begins using the same arguments that his father gave him. He begins to glorify Lord Shiva. As soon as Lord Shiva sees it, Lord Shiva sticks his fingers in his ears, and he won't have anything to do with it. What do you mean? I fought against Lord Krishna, when Aniruddha, I was fighting with him, and I did this and that, he gave up. He defeated all of Lord Brahma's arguments. And, it's not me. I am not the most advanced devotee of the Lord. At the moment. It's Lakshmi Devi. She is the most. And then he starts saying so many things. And then when his wife leaves the room, he leans over to tell Narada Muni, says, it's not Lakshmi Devi. It's Prahlad. But my wife is friends with Lakshmi Devi, so I have to say that. But the reason he did that is he was protecting his wife. He was concerned about her. He didn't want her to make any offenses. He's doing his duties, protecting his wife. Sometimes she also did other things where she didn't listen to him. So he was trying to protect her. So he said, actually, it's Prahlad. He is the one who got the most mercy of the Lord. And he gives a whole history, resume of Prahlad's good qualities and why he got the most mercy. So immediately, Prahlad goes to, Narada goes to see Prahlad. Prahlad, in that place where's Prahlad's stand? It's mentioned in the fifth canto where Prahlad is standing. And he begins to glorify Prahlad. Now, Prahlad is in the awkward position that he's the disciple of Narada Muni. He's not the brother like Shiva, or Indra, or not the father, so father could chastise him, brothers could stick. So Prahlad, he's awkward in the situation that Narada Muni is glorifying him, but this is his guru. His guru is glorifying him. But it's not true. He has to, in a very tactful and diplomatic way, prove that his guru is wrong. It's definitely not me. And he goes, what do you mean? Lord Nishing appeared, then disappeared, and that was it. I never saw him again. And he goes on. How can I be the most? If he had been the most merciful, he gives so many reasons, nullifying everything that Lord Shiva said. And everything that... Narada Muni, but in a very tactful way, not shouting like Brahma did, not pointing his ears, but tactful. He said, actually, the one who has achieved the most mercy of the Lord is Hanuman. He is the one who achieved most misses the Lord. And he gives again roll call of all Hanuman's good qualities and why and that and that. But then Narada Muni goes to see Hanuman. And he gives the same scene goes on again. Glorifies Hanuman. And Hanuman, actually, that is a nice purport in that passage where Sanatana Goswami, because all the commentary, the book is written by Sanatana Goswami, and he also writes his own commentary on the book, Digdarshana Tika. So there's a nice commentary about this in that section where Sanatana Goswami explains how one time Krishna, because he doesn't like his devotees to be puffed up. So one time he was noticing that Sudarshan Chakra, Garuda, and Satyabhama were getting a little bit puffed up. So he wanted to teach them a lesson. So he said to Sudarshan Chakra, he said to Garuda, you go tell Hanuman that I want to see him and you bring him to Dwarka. So Garuda thinks like, shocked. Says that. Okay, he just immediately, there he is. You know, Hanuman is doing his puja to Lord Ram, you know, Jai Ram, Shri Ram, you know, like this. And Guru says, Krishna wants to see you in Dwarka, come immediately. Hanuman says, wait a second, I'm doing my puja. When I'm finished, I'll come. So then Garuda got very angry. What do you mean? You're going to come after. Krishna's calling you. What do you... So he says, pulling on Hanuman, you know, pulling on him. Come right now, you know. And Hanuman, without missing a beat, without missing a mantra, his tail, that famous tail, comes up, grabs Garuda, and he flings him all the way back to Dwarka. And it lands, a pile of dust and feathers, you know, in front of Krishna. And Krishna smiles at Balaram. He doesn't think he's so hot anymore. So he said, but then, Krishna says to Balaram, said, you change into Lakshman, I'll change into Ram, and you tell, and he said to Satyavan, you know, you change yourself into Sita. Now, Garuda, you go tell Hanuman that Ram wants to see him. He's visiting Dwarka. Like that, you know. So Garuda, okay, a little bit more cautious this time. He goes, Hanuman, he says, Hanuman, yes, Ram wants to see you. He just drops the incense. Garuda doesn't see him anymore. He's missing. He just always sees, you know, he's Maruti. It's the wind going by. So then, as Hanuman is going to where Ram is, Sudarshan Chakra is there. He's protecting, you know, the customs agent, you know, the border patrol. Where are you going? You know, there's Ram called me. He says. He starts giving Hanuman a hard time. So Hanuman just takes Sudarshan Chakra, puts him in his mouth, keeps going. So Sudarshan Chakra got a little bit cut down. But then finally he gets to Dwarka where Ram and Lakshman and Sita are visiting. So he's paying obeisances, you know, to Ram and Lakshman, and he's in front of Sita. And he's looking at her and he says to Ram, says, who's this ugly woman? Sita was beautiful. Who's this ugly woman? In this way, crushed Krishna. Satyabhama's ego was crushed. So this, by using Hanuman, Krishna cut down the pride of his, he doesn't like proud devotees. So that's a little story that Sanatana Goswami tells in this India. So then, Hanuman says to Narada Muni, he says, actually, I'm not the one. I didn't get the most mercy of the Lord. How can it be? You know, when the Lord, he took all the Ayodhyavasis and left me behind. Lord Ram left 5 people behind. He took everybody else back to Ayodhya-dham. Who were the 5 people he left behind? Huh? Okay, here it is. That's one. That was an easy one, yeah. Okay, we got 3 more. Okay, that's right, 3. Huh? That was the first one.
There's two more. Mainda and Dvaita. The incarnation of the Ashwini Kumaras. In this way, the Ramalila and the Krishna Lila are connected because Jambavan, of course, daughter, he fought with Krishna and married, his daughter married Krishna. And Krishna killed, Balaram killed Dvaita because he blasphemed Lakshmi. Because if you read in the Ramayana, Dvaita and Mainda are big heroes, second only to Angada, Sugriva and Hanuman. They're very happy. But when Lakshman was laying, when he had when he was shot by Indrajit, and Dvaita had what is this? You know, he had some doubts, and that caused him to turn into an asura. So Hanuman is saying, oh, how can I be the most blessed of the Lord when he left me? Stick everybody else, and he left me behind. So he began lamenting. Actually, the real lamenting, we hear about Vipralamba. Well, Hanuman is the beginning of Vipralamba. He is always lamenting his separation from the Lord. She says the real persons who got the mercy is who? The Pandavas, Pancha Pandavas. And he gave a whole speech about how that was in fact. But then finally, so then Narada Muni says, okay, Hanuman, let's go. Narada Muni invites Hanuman, says, no, I can't go, I have to do my puja. You go. I'm happy. So Narada Muni arrives in Indraprastha, just as the Pandavas and their mother and Draupadi, they're trying to figure how to, some scheme to get Krishna to come and visit them. Well, you know, last time there was, you know, there was some plot, some way to get Krishna to come, you know. So then when Narada Muni started, you know, praising them about how fortunate they were, they got the most mercy of Krishna, they weren't buying it. Because here they were, having to go through all kinds of troubles just to try to trick Krishna to come and see them. So they were not happy with this idea. Anyway. All of them made a speech. You know, Draupadi made a speech. Each Pandava made a speech about why this is not true. So the real ones who got the mercy of the Lord is the Yadus and Dwarkapuri. They have got the real mercy of the Lord. And they gave the same thing. They gave an explanation. Narada Muni immediately went to Yadupuri, Dwarkapuri, and he, you know, begins to glorify them. He's talking with the head of the Yadus, Ugrasena, and he's glorifying them. And they, you know, and they weren't so. Ugrasena cut down the Yadus' glory to a certain degree. They say actually it was Uddhava. But then he pointed out the fact that actually something's very wrong, because normally. By this, you know, actually, by this time, Uddhava and Krishna should have been here by now. It's the time for the Darbar, you know, the Darbar has come and gone. So you go and see Uddhava. I want you to tell him that you missed the whole program and find out what something is going on. It's very wrong over there. So the Narada Muni, he knew the way to Krishna's house because he visited Dwarka many times. And he arrives on the scene where Uddhava, Balaram, Krishna's wives, his grandmother, the mother of Kamsa. She's a bit of a troublemaker because she's the mother of Kamsa. And Devaki and other, they're all there. They're discussing the fact that Krishna didn't get up. Krishna had a very bad night. Krishna's sick. He still hasn't gotten up, and he was having really a bad time. And there's a whole discussion starts coming up. Narada Muni is listening to it, and it divides into two camps: Uddhava, Balaram, and Rohini on one side, and all the others on the other side, because they begin they are.
they're saying that the real reason Krishna is like this is because he's missing the Vrajavasis. He can't sleep because he's speaking about them all the time. And so because Uddhava had been in Vrindavan, and Rohini, she also had lived in Vrindavan. Of course, Balaram, he was there in Vrindavan. They were all saying that Krishna, he's feeling sick this way because he's missing Vrindavan. And then Rukmini spoke up and said, yes, it's true.
It's true.
Many times in the middle of the night, Krishna begins calling his cows. He's calling his different cows and his boyfriends and his girlfriends. You know, I've seen him crying. He's crying for them. You know, he's crying for them. You know, so it's true that we have to let him go back to Vrindavan, you know. And then Satyabhama, she says, what do you mean in the nighttime? In the daytime, I see him thinking this way. We're his wives in name only. Only in name we're his wives. You know, but then there's a whole tussle because some want him to Krishna to regain his sanity because he's transcendental, he's gone a little, having a nervous breakdown. Transcendental nervous breakdown. So they figured he has to go back to Vrindavan. But the other side, they said, there's no way. No way. Devaki, and they don't, because then they'll die. They don't want to be like they don't want to end up like the Vrajavasis, you know, who are completely in turmoil because Krishna is not there. So then they hatch on a plan. They hatch a plan to have it satisfy both at the same time. They decide, Lord Brahma comes, and he's very disturbed to see his father, Krishna, in this condition. So they come up with a plan to make a new Vrindavan. They make a new Vrindavan by the ocean, and they make all dioramas. Just exactly like Vrindavan. It's all dioramas of Nanda and Yashoda and all the gopis. And the only ones who would not be dioramas would be Krishna, Balaram, and Rohini, because Rohini lived there. So they were live actors in this village. And so then Bala said, okay, you want to go to, we're going to take you to Vrindavan and you'll feel better. So Krishna is, immediately he feels better, and he dresses himself up as a cowherd boy, and he, you know, decorates himself, and he's so beautiful that his own grandmother started chasing him. His grandmother, Balaram, and they had to tackle them and hide them, otherwise Krishna would know that this is trick. His own grandmother was chasing him. He looked so beautiful. So attractive. Transcendental, remember, it's all transcendental. the different wives, and they were so attracted to Krishna's feature as a cowherd boy that they were chasing him. So they had to, you know, the others had to tackle them and hide them so that Krishna wouldn't come out of this spell. So he was going through this new Vrindavan, the original new Vrindavan, and he was talking to his, he came to his mother, but his mother wasn't saying anything. He said, "Oh, you must be angry at me because I got up late or this." You know, he was, because he didn't know that he was not reacting, that she was not animate. And then Rohini came and said, "Oh, your mother is busy now. I'll feed you." So this way he had to get some live interaction. Then, you know, similarly he saw Nanda Maharaj and this and that. He's talking to his cowherd boys. He was so excited that he didn't notice that they were not responding. Then Krishna comes across Radharani, the murti of Radharani. And then he starts having a conversation with her, but she's not answering him. So he's having further conversation. Are you angry with me because I didn't last night? And he's getting this whole spiel with Radharani, and she's still not answering him. He thinks she must be really upset. So then, he takes
a look down the street that way, he takes a look down the street the other way,
and then he embraces Radharani and kisses her and he runs away. He runs away. And this way he's with Balaram and they're, you know, they got the cows are real. And then, and they're walking along and they're by the Yamuna, and Krishna and Balaram are talking, and this way Krishna is just feeling so good because he's with his most dearly beloved Brijabasis, you know, the Nanda and Yashoda, and then more advanced than them are the most was the Gopas, and then above them the Gopis, and then the most dear to Krishna is Radha. She is the most dear to Krishna. But then Krishna started noticing that the Jamuna looked very funny. It was very big. And on the other side you could see Dwarkapuri. But by this time nobody was worrying because he sort of regained his composure. But he realized, but he revealed that Radharani is the light of Krishna. She is Krishna Pran. She is his very life and soul. Radharani ki jai. Radhastami ki jai. So, my time is up, just in time. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to purify myself. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Radharani ki jai. Sanatan Goswami ki jai. Brihad Bhagavatamrita ki jai.
Give me a copy, mine messed up. Would it belong to you? You give me a copy, okay?
Make a copy of me.